Welcome to everyone listening all around the world, all across the United States. We are coming to you live from the Lost History and Conspiracy Media Center, which is the Coast to Coast AM studios right here in Los Angeles, California. I'm your host, Timmy Church. And tonight, my guests are Mel Fabregas and Jay Widener. Mel is the veteran host of Veritas Radio. And before we kick things off, one of the things that I do is I listen to late night radio. It's what I do. I study it. I go back and listen to everything. Long John Neville back in New York in the 50s and 60s, and Billy Goodman out of Vegas. Open Minds with Bill Jenkins right here in Los Angeles. Both of those shows were back in the 80s. And then Coast to Coast, you know, came along and took off. But I study it. And it's what I do. And I figure out who asks the right questions. What is their style? How do they approach things? Do they approach it as a host or as a researcher or as somebody that doesn't know anything? There's a lot of different angles and ways to look at this. So I study everybody. And I'm often asked, you know, Church, who do you listen to? And I'll admit it right now. My secret go-to host is Mel Fabregas. And it's for a lot of different reasons. But one thing is for sure. He knows his stuff. He does his research. And he knows his guests. And he never phones it in. His interest is there. And I just enjoy his style and the way that he does things. So that's my secret guy, Mel Fabregas. And earlier this week, Mel and I were talking, and I found out that he's never done Coast before. And I thought to myself, how can this be, right? I mean, I just could not believe it. So, you know, I took a look at the schedule here and did some things and made sure that I got Mel on the show tonight. And I'm very excited about this. He's been doing this for quite a long time, almost 10 years now. And if you haven't heard Mel before, he certainly fits exactly what Coast to Coast is all about. But he's got his own way of doing things. His knowledge, his insight, his research into all things conspiracy is second to none. And I cannot wait for the conversation to start tonight. So get ready for that. But first up tonight, Jay Widener. That's right. He's here. And we're going to get an update on the Nazca mummies. All of them. When we had Jay back on, I think it was in June, third week of June, the story at that time had just broke. And if you remember over the 3-day period at that point, and I don't remember if we had Jay on a Friday or a Saturday, but at that point it was up to 30 million views or something in just a few days. It was a crazy, quick breaking story. Well, now 2 months have gone by, and Gaia has had their time to start to collect some data. And tonight we will get the latest news on everything from Jay. Very excited. This is classic Coast to Coast AM tonight on a Saturday. So get ready. Turn down the lights. Pull up the blankie, do what you got to do, get your drink of choice, and prepare yourself. I'm very excited about this. You can follow me right now on Twitter at JChurchRadio. You know the drill, okay? Twitter is always live to my left. I wish you could be here in the studio with me. You know, I've got Nathan here, and I've got Donna, and we're in this dark room. But what you would see is Twitter is live to my left. All right, so any questions, comments, post them, and maybe your tweet will get read on the air. And as always, enjoy the bumper music tonight. A very, very cool selection of stuff going on. And there's always a theme. Nobody figured it out last night. But if you figure it out, you will get read on the air. And also, it's Saturday night, and I kind of talked Mel into hanging out because he's a first-time guest, and I love having a first-time guest on Coast. When I would listen to Coast growing up, living across the street from the studios here, when the first time guests were coming on, I was glued to the radio. And now I get to do that. So I said to Mel, you want to do the phones? And he knows what it's like to do the phones here at Coast. So I think Mel just may hang out with us and go quarter to quarter. Okay, I'm your host, Jimmy Church, and I'll be right back with our first guest, Jay Widener. This is Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast AM. I'm your host, Jimmy Church, a Saturday night. And, you know, the big fight just ended. So that's the, you know, the Conor McGregor, Floyd Mayweather fight right before showtime. So all of our audience is happy. So they just get to come straight over to the show. Our guest tonight is Jay Widener. And he has been called by Wired Magazine an authority on the Hermetic and alchemical traditions. He's a renowned filmmaker, author, and scholar, and a very, very good friend of not only myself, but the show. He is the writer, director of feature films like The Last Avatar, director of the critically acclaimed documentary Infinity, The Ultimate Trip, Journey Beyond Death, and writer, director of the documentary series on the work of Stanley Kubrick, Kubrick's Odyssey, and Beyond the Infinite. He is also the senior director of content for Gaia TV, developing and producing cutting-edge programs, and one of their current series is called Uncovering Nazca. It's a multi-part documentary featuring a three-fingered and three-toed mummy that they have named Maria, along with a baby and other mummies that appear to be possibly reptilian in nature. He's also got a new series that just started this past weekend, and I just watched it over at Gaia, and we'll try to get that in tonight, too, and talk about that very interesting piece on The Matrix. I would like to welcome back to Coast, Jay Widener. Jay, good evening.
Hey, good evening. How you doing?
Doing good, Jay. And I can't wait for this update on the mummies. And this is what is really funny to me. You and I just spent 3 or 4 days together up at the Eclipse, and the subject of the mummies never came up between us. And I was driving back to L.A., and Rita and I was like, she said, did you talk to Jay about the mummies? I said, you know what? It never came up. So that's why you're here tonight. I get my update now. I don't know what's coming. What stage are we at right now? And I know that the DNA stuff is out. What have you got to report?
Well, the mummy, the first mummy, Maria, is, you know, not quite human, but close enough for government work. We've found three more. We haven't. The person who discovered Maria has discovered three more bodies in the tomb that they found Maria and all the rest of the bodies in. Those bodies have now been exhumed and are being examined. The oddest thing that I can report to you is that we found a lot of strontium in the bodies. And that is odd, because strontium is an artificial ingredient that was created in the 1940s, you know, during nuclear research. So we can't figure out quite how the bodies got exposed to strontium. But, I mean, it does exist naturally, so it could exist. And possibly there's some other explanations which we haven't come up with yet. So we're a little afraid, honestly, to go down to Peru to examine the three new bodies, because the Peruvian cultural ministry is now involved. And I personally suspect that their sudden interest in this project is somehow a trap. And so I've been advising Gaia and everybody else to be very careful here. Because if we do go down there and we do accidentally show the tomb to the Peruvian authorities, we're opening up ourselves to being arrested. And Peru is very, very insistent that you know, anyone messing with pre-Columbian artifacts are going to be arrested. And you do not want to spend even a day in a Peruvian jail, trust me. And I've known people who have. The food itself is just awful. So we're a little reticent right now to enter into any further investigation. We have lawyers talking to the Peruvian government to make sure that if we do go forward with all of this, that they're going to be cool. They themselves are claiming that nothing that we have found is of any interest to them. So that again is raising my raising questions as to why they're suddenly interested in what we're doing if they think that what we're doing has nothing of interest. So I'm suspicious, as I think we should be, and we're waiting for the lawyers to tell us what to do next.
How many mummies have been found so far?
Let's see here. 1, 2, 3, 4, 7.
Seven. We have Maria, the baby, and the other.
Oh, that's right. You're right. The Maria, the baby, the two small reptilians, and now the three new ones.
Right. And the three new ones, are they of?
They're three fingered.
Like Maria.
Yeah, they appear to be exactly like Maria.
Not the reptilian. Okay, for the audience that hasn't gone to Gaia and looked at the documentaries, I think there's 5 or 6 that are up now.
They're all free up at Gaia.com, G-A-I-A.com.
Yeah, they're all free, so you can go and check it out. There are two distinct different types of mummies here. We have the three-fingered, three-toed. I think equally as interesting are what appears to be reptilian. And to my eyes, the reason why I say reptilian is the rib cage goes from the bottom of the chin all the way to the hips. You know, the rib cage just isn't
like
in the torso. Yeah, like
that's
a snake.
Right. Like a snake. Yeah, that's very intriguing. And also when I examined the skin up close, it did appear to have some kind of scales. So besides the fact it has eggs and the funny rib cage, it also seems to have scales, which would seem to mean that there is a humanoid reptilian species that once walked the face of this earth, which is jaw-dropping enough. So the other thing I want to address is that, a lot of people have come out and said that these bodies were simply humans, where they, they cut off the thumb and the little finger and left just the three fingers. Well, that would leave, assuming that they did it after the critter died, then that would leave amazing scar tissue that would never heal and would just be left there, you know, cut wide open. And I guarantee you, I did not see anything like that on any of the bodies I examined. So if they did it alive, they cut the fingers off alive and left it time to heal before they killed the humanoids, again, there would be scar tissue. So I don't buy the fact that they're saying that somebody surgically removed the thumb and the little finger from these hands and feet. I just don't buy it. I saw it. The foot and the hand conform to the fingers. There isn't any obtrusions, you know, that would happen if you were cutting off, you know, entire indexes. So, no, I don't. That critique is not, that's fake news.
Yeah, well, my eyes, it just looks natural to me where the wrist forms into the three fingers, where those bones are. It looks correct. Look, I'm not an anthropologist. I'm not a biologist. But it just looks normal to me. I've seen plenty of x-rays now with a complete human hand and this, and it's definitely two different things going on. Plus the entire bone structure in the forearm is different to my eyes from what I can see, and I think it's very clear. But what about the DNA testing? When can we expect that to come back?
Well, of course, that's the most complicated part of the entire endeavor, and we've got several labs in several countries cross-indexing things right now. And, you know, it's coming in at being more human than a chimpanzee, but not 100% human. But these are just, you know, they're not complete results, so we can't actually say anything yet, and I don't want to say anything yet because I just want to be careful here. I don't want to make anybody think I'm jumping to conclusions or anything. So I would prefer to wait until they're done. Hopefully, they'll be done within a couple months.
But are you suggesting that some of the testing has come back when you say it's indicating more human than anything else? Is this some kind of preliminary?
Yeah, the preliminary tests show that it's more human than a chimpanzee, but it's not entirely human. That's just preliminary, and that's all I can say at this point. I have to wait until the rest of the tests come through before I go any further.
And what kind of testing is being done? Because this isn't a normal DNA test that you would get from some, you know, DNA ancestry company off of television. You know, you're doing a swab out of your
DNA. Works is that as it deteriorates, it unravels, and then what you have to do is you have to recombine the DNA. And the longer the deterioration, the more the recombination of the DNA takes. And this thing is approximately, 1,400 years ago?
Right.
So the DNA is going to take a long time to recombine. It can be done, but it's like a really incredibly huge jigsaw puzzle. And you have to slowly put it together. And you can do it because the pieces fit like a jigsaw puzzle, but it just takes a long time. Imagine like a 40 by 40 foot jigsaw puzzle where every piece is, half an inch by half an inch.
Right.
That's kind of what we're dealing with here. And, people are going to get frustrated and everything, and I understand, but we have to do the job right.
Well, I don't think, in this world where everything is instant gratification, why is this taking so long? But it's just a DNA test,
It's just a DNA test. And again, if you're doing a DNA test on somebody from a crime 5 years ago, it's going to be much easier than somebody 1,400 years ago. So,
right.
Or 1,600 years ago. So, I mean, it's just this is the way it goes. And we're doing it right. I think people should be finally happy that someone is actually doing this thing right and not rushing to judgment.
Now, what about the other objects that apparently were found in this tomb as well? There were some other objects there. Are those, the rocks and the gems and some other things that were reportedly found, are those still in Peru or have those left the country?
No, everything's in Peru. We cannot break the law. Nothing is leaving Peru. We're not going to jeopardize any operation that we're doing by breaking the law. Pre-Columbian remnants have to stay in Peru. They are owned by the Peruvian government. We completely 100% respect that. We respect the people of Peru. We're not there to steal their objects. We're only there to find out the truth.
Now, the Maria is still there. Is Maria not in possession of the government?
No. The government, surprisingly enough, has shown very little interest in any of this outside of the fact that they finally contacted us, that they wanted us to talk to them. But we don't know what they want to talk to them, what they want us to talk to them about. And we're a little bit reticent, to go forward because everything, frankly, to me, and that's what I'm advising everyone, smells like a trap. And I don't want any of my friends who are traveling to Peru to be arrested. I know what goes on in those jails, and I know what kind of collusion and what kind of demands that they would make of their American counterparts to get back the people that we love. So I'm right now very reticent to send anyone down there at all.
I think that the best thing that could happen is to go down there and get arrested. I mean, it would certainly make it visible.
It would, but I cannot, morally send my friends and colleagues down into a situation that I know is dicey. And I've been through so many times that I know exactly how these people deal with things. And like I say, I have respect for the Peruvian people, but their government is a little questionable.
Our guest tonight, Jay Widener. We're talking about the Nazca Mummies. This is Coast to Coast AM. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. Classic Coast to Coast Saturday night. Stay with us. All right, welcome back. Enjoy the bumper music tonight. We're rocking here in the studio. It's Saturday night. So the Nazca Mummies, they have absolutely tipped our conspiracy lost history world upside down. Jay is spearheading everything. Our guest is Jay Widener. We are discussing the Nazca Mummies. More with Jay right after this short break. Stay with us. Welcome back to Coast AM Saturday night. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. We're talking with Jay Widener of Gaia about the Nazca Mummies. And Jay, one of the concerns, I think, not only for you, but for all of us from the gate, was that the DNA test that would come from the fingers and, you know, the bones, and that everything would match, right? That there wasn't anything post-mortem added or sewn on to these mummies. That's probably the most important thing here, isn't it?
Yeah, I'd agree. And so far, that's turned out to be, everything's turned out to be completely intact. There hasn't been any kind of craziness from like a fingers to a rib in aging or anything like that.
Including, well, I mean, I assume that everything is still okay, but we're talking from the skin, from the butt, from the bones, from the fingers, from locations all over the mummy.
Let me tell you, there was an ex-cop at the examination, and he was absolutely freaked out when he saw how many samples we were taking from Maria. And he came up to us like waving his hands, enough is enough, there'll be nothing left, you know. And so we really made, I mean, I'm sorry to damage the goods, but we had to get it right. And so, you know, I acquiesced to actually taking many, many samples. So, yes, it's going to be cross-indexed. It's going to be done right. We're not going to screw around. We're not going to have our critics win out when they criticize us. We're going to do it right. If it's a hoax, we'll say it's a hoax. If it's not, we'll say it's not.
How is the team? Is the team still together? There are reports out there that I'm sure you've read the same things that popped up in my news feed, that there's some dissension amongst the troops. Is the team still together?
Well, I think there's, of course, when you get to this stage of the game, some people begin to start going renegade. There's nothing wrong with that. And I think that may be happening to a small extent. And I'm actually glad, because that keeps the Peruvian government kind of bewildered as to who and what is going on. So I'm not really against people going renegade, as long as they keep the scientific paradigm in mind. And that's all I really care about. And so far, we're just sticking with the samples that we got. We don't have the bodies. They're in Peru. We only have the samples, and we're only going forward with those. And whatever happens on the ground in Peru, until legal help comes in, we're not going to do anything.
At what stage would you, if this proves to be some elaborate hoax and you guys were played, at what point do you come forward and say, okay, you know, this is what's going on here. We got played. When would you do something like that?
As soon as we find out. As soon as we find out, we'll tell you that we've been played. And then we'll begin legal proceedings against several different people who have played us. And they will pay the price. I guarantee it.
The possibility of another black eye in our community is something that we don't need. We never need it to begin with, but it has happened a few times over the last couple of years, and it's tough because it feeds the fire out there for the critics and the debunkers that are, you know, that see, here we go again, right? And we don't need it this time around.
No, we don't. That's why we're being so careful. And so we're kind of being sandwiched here by one side who's claiming without any evidence that we're presenting a fraud and a hoax, and then the other side who says that we're not really following the scientific paradigm. And I'm saying to you that we are following the scientific paradigm, and if any evidence of a hoax shows up, we're going to be the first to report it. I am not afraid to report when I've been hoaxed. I've been hoaxed before. I come right out and I say it. You know, I don't try to hide or anything. I'm an honest journalist, and I'm going to come out and say it. My reputation is on the line, so no way am I going to hide it or make a cover-up, for God's sakes, no way.
And I found it interesting when I started to read about the money play, right? That this is just done for money, but I'm watching the videos for free, right? And I was thinking, well,
yeah,
that's
right.
That feels a little strange for me, for people to make those kind of claims when you can watch all of the investigation for free.
Yeah, that whole thing's been kind of strange. The critics have—I don't know. I guess there's—I'm really reaching the conclusion, Jimmy, that there's a lot of agents out there who—I don't know if they're paid or they just say it, but they want to do everything they can to take the little tiniest thing and tweak it into a nightmare. And I've lost—I have to say—a lot of faith in our community over this incident, because I'm on the inside, I know the facts, and when I see how they're being misinterpreted, it's really disheartening. I think we should be happy that this turn of events has happened. We should be happy that we have someone willing to spend the money to do this job right. We should be happy that it so far is turning out to look like we have a humanoid species with three fingers and three toes that walked on the face of the earth. And I don't know. You know, I don't know what to say about it after that.
Your new series, I knew you couldn't stay away long, Jay. Hollywood Decoded. It is what you do. Is this the first segment, which was done on the Matrix trilogy, was fascinating for me. First off, my love for the Matrix, right? Mm-hmm. But does this make you happy? Is this where your bliss is?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I'm really good at it, and I think Jay Dyer's really good at it. He's sort of like my younger comrade here, and I think that the world needs to see what is really going on behind the scenes in the movies that we love and watch. And Jay Dyer and I we met a couple of years ago at a conference, and we immediately hit it off and started talking about, you know, doing something together to really examine the esoteric nature of Hollywood films, and we love Hollywood, and so we kind of listed out a bunch of films, you know, Chinatown and Eyes Wide Shut and 2001 and The Terminators and The Matrix and all these great films, and I presented it to Gaia, and I got a very affirmative response. And so we put forward, we've done 23 episodes so far. The first one just got released on Gaia this week, The Matrix. And next week is The Terminators, Cameron's movies. And then after that is 2001, A Space Odyssey, with a whole new take on all of these films. And I think you're going to be, I'll tell you what I like about Hollywood Decoded. It's that it takes something in pop culture, which we all have seen, and we all either love, hate, or whatever, and then what Jay and I do is, like jazz musicians, we riff off of the central theme, just like jazz musicians riff off the central melody of a song, and then we expound outwards to show you what's really going on. And maybe even the filmmakers themselves may not know what they're adding to their film. But we're there to kind of expound and expose that. And I think that, well, the response so far has been incredibly positive. And I just want to tell everybody, you know, the best is ahead. And, you know, if we get the show going, we could have you know, two or three seasons of us expounding on many, many themes that are in Hollywood films that will help us understand reality. I think that's really what Jay and I are doing. Jay Dyer is an amazing guy. He's got a degree in philosophy, and, you know, he's young, but he's hip, and he understands what's going on, and he's the perfect counterpoint, I think, for me. In this show, because I'm sort of the vagabond, rogue, crazy guy, and he's more of the scholarly guy, and he kind of pulls me back to the scholarly, which I do need and I appreciate.
Well, you both have different insights on the films, and yeah. It almost, I think you probably would be the wrong person to go to a movie with, right? I'm going to go to enjoy myself, and you have a way, and so does Jay, of seeing through the films. And when you present it, it makes me ask this question. Is the underlying theme or the subliminal messages, is it done with intent, or is it an accidental insight into the psyche of the director?
That is really the best question of all. You know, in the new one, the Matrix one that we just did, we do a couple of minutes on the fact that Neo, his passport, the date on his passport is 9/11/2001, right? And you know, we expound on this and wonder, you know, did the Wachowskis, you know something ahead of time, or did they get a feed on a link of psychic energy? You know, Cliff High, I think you've had Cliff on before. Cliff High thinks that everybody is psychic, and I have to agree. I think that is true. So I think what we're doing is we're dealing more on an archetypal level, not on a conspiratorial level, although there is a conspiratorial level. I don't want to say there isn't, but I think that we're dealing more on an archetypal psychological level, a Jungian kind of level, where all of the information that is known to humanity is actually present to all of us at all times, and that, you know, if artists and creative people seem to be able to reach in deeper to dig that kind of stuff out, and I think that's what's going on in movies. These great filmmakers are, you know, you have to be highly intelligent to be able to make a film, trust me. I'm not intelligent enough to make a great film, but Stanley Kubrick and Spielberg and Orson Welles, they are. And when they do, these guys are super intelligent, super well-read, and they're bringing that super intelligence and their super well-read nature into the film, whether it's conscious or not. I think that answers that question.
And it does, but the fact that September 11th, that date, 2001, appears in so many different films. It's not just in this, but it is done with intent in The Matrix. It's a passport, and they do the cutaway over Agent Smith's shoulder as he flips it over, and it's there. It's upside down, but it's framed with intent to be there so you can see this date. That's pretty bizarre.
The Back to Future films
absolutely
are completely loaded with predictive programming, which is one of our favorite themes, and we'll get to Back to the Future eventually. And it's one of our favorite themes in the series is how movies are psychologically preparing us for things that are happening in the future. This is a theme over and over that we're presenting in Hollywood Decoded, and Jay Dyer and I are firmly believe that some of this is intent. I mean, there's no doubt in the chase scene in the Terminator 2 series in the L.A. Basin where the truck sees Arnold Schwarzenegger driving a semi-truck and he sees the tunnel entrance in the L.A. River and it says, caution, 9 feet, 11 inches. And, of course, the truck is way above that, so the whole top of the truck is cut off when he enters into the tunnel. I don't think that's I don't want to say Cameron is in on the conspiracy, but you have to wonder. Same in Batman, the final one that Nolan did, with the references to Sandy Hook. And this is where the terrorists are, right? And they point to Sandy Hook on the map.
Right.
I mean, over and over we see this predictive programming. And I, you know, at a certain point when you start looking at it, you think there must be a confluence of interests at the very top between government, intelligence, military, and Hollywood.
Well, you have to consider...
Absolutely.
That with Nolan, they could have pointed at any city in the United States on that map. You know, Sandy Hook of all of them. That's a pretty strange coincidence. And that date of September 11, 2001, being on Neo's passport is very strange. Have the Wachowskis addressed this?
Not really. But I'll point out something else which is rather strange and is, and it has to do with your next guest, Mel Fabregas. I was on Mel Fabregas's show on the night that The Dark Knight Rises opened in the U.S., and I was talking about The Dark Knight Rises opening, coming, and that I had been told by an insider that Christopher Nolan was putting all sorts of insights into that film. And the shooting in Aurora, Colorado, happened about an hour and a half after I got off my show record with Mel Fabregas, in which the guy dressed up as the Joker from Batman 2 opens up fire on a crowd of people trying to watch Batman 3. I mean, I tell you, I was like shaken to the bone when that happened.
And not that far from where you live, too.
Not that far from where I live, about 15 miles.
Yeah, very crazy.
Yeah.
Jay, how do you, we've got about a minute left here. How do you watch a film? Do you try to enjoy it and then break it down later? Do you just try to be an audience member first?
I do. I try. I can't. But I try.
Right.
And, you know, my first problem with movies is I spend the first 15 minutes trying to figure out what the propaganda message in this film is, because that's how they raise money. And if I find there's not a heavy propaganda message, then I can settle in and enjoy the film.
The Shining, one of my favorite films of all time. And now the opening 5 minutes of the film, for me, is just ruined. I'm looking at everything that you have always pointed out in the movie, the clouds and the road and the Volkswagen and all of the symbology and everything that is happening in the opening shots of the film. I now believe that they were done with absolute intent. And I thank you for ruining the film for me. Thank you so much, Jay.
I've ruined many films for many people.
You're the very best, Jay, and you know that. Thank you so much. When is the we've got 5 seconds left. The next segment for NASCA, when's it coming out?
Probably within a week or two. It's going to be really good.
Thank you so much, Jay. Right. Gaia.com, everybody. Hollywood Decoded is his new series with Jay Dyer. This is Coast to Coast AM. It's Saturday night, old school. I'm your host, Jimmy Church, and we'll be right back with Mel Fabregas.